Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we visit with Jennifer Cheverini, New York Times bestselling author. Her most recent novel is The Union Quilters. It's the 17th book in the Elm Creek Quilt series. She lives in Middleton, Wisconsin, just outside of Madison. Always great to have her with us. And so we'll be talking with her about her series of books and also about, obviously, about her latest book. We'll also be talking with John Munson. He joins us right now here on the Ideas Network to talk about the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. And our goal is to keep bringing you talks with folks like Jennifer Cheverini during day in and day out. We do it in large part with listener contributions, and your gift of any amount right now makes a big difference as we raise the money we need to make these discussions possible. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. John, welcome. We have a goal this hour.
We do indeed. Sisyphus called. He wants his rock back, but we're not quite ready to give it up yet. Last hour, we had a goal of 50 pledges, and we heard from 51 listeners, so that's good news. But we have a brand new goal, Larry, and we need to get 60 pledges by 12:30 this afternoon, the end of this program. Meeting that goal will mean that we make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to fund the programs that you rely on, like the one you're listening to. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give us a hand with this goal.
Absolutely. We'll be talking with Jennifer Cheverini about her new book. It's called The Union Quilters. It's the latest installment, as I mentioned, in that Elm Creek Quilt series of historical novels. And discussions like this on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. So we hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, we know that you give to WPR to support the programs, and as an added incentive for your good deed, we have something special.
Absolutely, we do. You can receive a copy of The Union Quilters when you donate $150 or more. Give now, give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and ask for a copy of this novel as your thank you gift when you give $150. I've read it and it's a wonderful novel.
Well, chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue close to you, whether it's gardening, health care, state issues, technology, the environment, or literature. We always try to bring you shows that you'll find relevant, interesting, well, and more importantly, enjoyable. So because WPR touches your life, make a pledge. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is easy. It only takes a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time.
Well, a dollar or two a week, that adds up to $50 or $100 for the year, and all year long you'll benefit from this program and all the other great programs on WPR that you love. So make that contribution now. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and please give as generously as you can.
Just had someone contribute $30, and every dollar really does make a difference. And when you decide to pledge $120, that's $10 a month or more, you'll receive the WPR member card.
Well, the member card is a membership experience. Every time you get a 2-for-1 discount at a participating restaurant, bed and breakfast, golf course, or cultural attraction, you'll be reminded of how much you enjoy Wisconsin Public Radio. In fact, Larry, this card proves that it is possible. Previously not known, it is possible to have your cake and eat it too. Because by the time you get done using this card, you will have gotten your pledge back. So you get to make the pledge and you get it all back in benefits. So please pledge now $120 or more and receive the member card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I've actually gotten the whole amount back in a single weekend.
See?
You can do it in a single weekend with 2-for-1 for a place to a bed and breakfast, 2-for-1 dining, 2-for-1 attractions. You can look like a big spender.
I'll tell you what, in Minnesota, that's called a heck of a deal.
So please, here's a goal. We've got 60 pledges to get for this hour. We have 59 to go. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And be sure to ask for The Union Quilters by Jennifer Chavarini with your pledge of $150. Pledge now in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lots of great comments from people. Thanks for everybody, to everyone who has contributed during this drive. If you haven't, donate right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We would love to hear from you. And I'm really looking forward to visiting with Jennifer Chavarini. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Nice to have you back.
Well, it's great to be here.
Oh, 17 books.
I know. I've been busy.
Now, here we are. This happens to be the 150th anniversary of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have this in mind when you wrote this book?
I really would love to say that I had planned it out that well, but that would be dishonest. So, no, I always write the book that I'm most inspired to write at that time, and I typically write them 2 years before they're published. So 2 years ago when I started this book, I was not. I was just thinking about what story was I most captivated by, which one had the strongest hold on my imagination, and it just worked out very well. The timing worked out great, but I can't take credit for planning it that way.
Well, you've been with us a number of times, but I want to give those who are just tuning in and maybe haven't heard you speak before, talk about your whole series. This is interesting how you got it started. You were you just wrote a book.
I did. Well, I wasn't planning to write a series when I got started. I am a quilter, and I was a quilter way back then, too. And when you're starting out as a novelist, the advice that you get most often is write what you know. And since I know quilters, I know their inside jokes and their little controversies and the wonderful camaraderie and sharing that goes on in the quilting community, and as well as the quilts themselves, the amazing traditions, the historical importance, the fascinating folklore, and all those evocative quilt block names. I was just so intrigued by this world that I wanted to write about it. I wanted to write about contemporary quilters and how they take the art form into so many amazing new directions. Mm-hmm. And then I also wanted to work in so much of the folklore and folk history that I had learned along the way as a quilter. And so I wrote my first book, The Quilter's Apprentice, and I was fortunate that it was received quite warmly and people wanted a sequel. So I wrote a sequel, and then I wanted to do other things with the characters and bring in some new characters, and one book really just led to the next in a very organic fashion. As an earlier book, a question or a character or some kind of issue or a bit of folklore kind of stuck in my mind, and I thought, well, now what if, and what about this person? And so I could take a secondary character from an earlier book and make that person the protagonist, primary character of a new story, or I could delve into a different aspect of quilting history. In my previous novel, The Aloha Quilt, I was able to explore the wonderful beauty and cultural traditions of Hawaiian applique quilting. So because I haven't been...
Yeah, interesting, too.
Yeah, well, I certainly found it so. And, of course, the research trips to Hawaii weren't bad either. But since I haven't been locked in the traditional series format, where it's just strict chronological order, since I can go and write a book about the Roaring Twenties or contemporary Hawaii, or, as in this case, the Civil War era, it's kept the series very fresh and fun and interesting for me to write, and I think that certainly translates into a much more enjoyable reading experience for people who've been following the series all along or who have just jumped in.
And the nice thing is, pretty much you can jump in wherever you want.
Yes, I deliberately try to do that because the books are so different. If someone is very interested in the Underground Railroad, I hope they'll want to read all of my books, of course, but I don't want them to feel that they will be lost if they jump in the middle because they want to read a historical novel about the Underground Railroad. If they prefer contemporary stories set in beautiful locations, they can jump in with the Aloha Quilt. If they're a Civil War buff, they can jump in with the Union Quilters. So I do write them so that they stand alone.
I think you've got to be one of the few, or maybe the only person, the only author who jumps back and forth like this. It must be It's got to be crazy to keep the storylines and the people together.
Well, you know, I've been with them for so long.
Yeah.
The first book was published in 99, so that I've dwelt among them, and I've lived in these locations in my imagination for so long that I think I have a good handle on keeping things straight. However, I admit, I go back and reread my own books just to make sure that I'm getting all those little details accurate.
And I bet if you don't, you'd hear...
Well, I know that there are a few continuity errors that no one has caught yet.
Is that right?
But, and I want you all to go out there right now and start looking for them. There are a few that haven't been caught yet. There are several that have been caught, and I've heard about them. But there are a few that I keep waiting for someone to tell me about that they haven't picked up on. But I think people are going to the stories for an enjoyable experience. They want to learn something, whether it's about a particular historical era or a region of the country or style of quilting. So I don't think they're really looking for all of those little things. I think they're just interested in character-driven stories that maybe teach them something along the way, too.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, as we talk with her about her Elm Creek quilt series and her latest book, which is called The Union Quilters. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. I don't even know if I've given the number. Maybe I did once. Let's give it now. Join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Are you a quilter? How'd you become one? Women often have come together in groups to quilt. Do you see that as a way to build community? You have a treasured quilt in your family, maybe? What's the story behind it? Or are you a Civil War buff? What about that period that fascinates you? I'm kind of a Civil War buff, so this was certainly a fascinating book to me. Give us a call again, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. We have an email from Cindy. I'm so excited to hear this program with Jennifer. I'm anxious to hear about the new book and to talk about quilting. I'm involved in the quilting group at my church, but I do mostly sewing of the backs, fillers, and edges of the quilt. I think undertaking the making of the pieced tops is out of my league so far, but I'd love to learn. Do you have any recommendations for basic or beginning quilting books to teach a sewer to quilt? Thanks for this and all your programs. I can't wait also for tomorrow when Scott Craven joins us. Okay.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for your email. And if you are already sewing the backs and fillers of edges of quilt, you have more than enough skill to be able to complete a top. Don't sell yourself short. If it's something you want to try, you really should just jump right in. That's one of the beauties about quilting. It is such an accessible art form. You can make a stunning quilt using very simple patterns, using only a straight stitch. And then, of course, you can also make stunning quilts using very complex patterns. But there really is a pattern that even a beginner can attempt and do a beautiful job with. And as far as a general quilting reference good for a beginner, Fonz and Porter they're very well known in the quilting world. They have they have TV shows and magazines. One of my favorite reference books is their book, The Quilter's Complete Guide.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful resource with very good instructions for doing a lot of the basic aspects of quilt making. And they have some patterns in there too. So when they're teaching you the skill, you then have a pattern that you can use to practice that skill. But certainly give it a try. There's really a quilt pattern out there for everyone. I would suggest you contact a local quilt shop and ask them if they have classes. That might be one way to go about it.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, as we talk with her about her latest book, The Union Quilters, and about her Elm Creek quilt series. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in our conversation with Jennifer Cheverini at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And you know what? Let's take a call. Julie in Little Chute, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I want to thank you for this great show. I listen to you all the time, especially when I'm quilting like I'm doing right now.
Ah, perfect.
And I'm working on log cabin blocks. for a project, and I was so happy to hear that Jennifer was going to be on. I've never read any of her books, but I wanted to start, and I wanted to know if Jennifer could recommend to me what she considers her most historically in-depth book, because I do like a historical novel.
Well, thank you for calling in. I think that all of my historical novels are very in depth, and that's because I have the wonderful Wisconsin Historical Society, where I can do so much of my research and really make sure I not only understand the broad shadings of the era, but also I can do that in depth research so that it can be very focused on specific topics. Some of my most popular historical novels, The Lost Quilter, came out a couple of years ago, and it focuses on a runaway slave who was recaptured in Pennsylvania and was taken back down south, and it shows the Civil War era from the perspective of this recaptured runaway slave, and most of it takes place in Edisto Island and Charleston, South Carolina, so you get that very interesting perspective of the Civil War. And then the Union Quilters, too. I focus a lot on this book on the northern home front, because when I was doing my research, I found that most Civil War history and most historical fiction focuses on the battlefields, which, of mm-hmm. course, makes perfect sense. We need to have good, relevant history about those areas. And then also, if they talk about the home front, it's mostly the southern home front. But there really wasn't quite as much about the northern home front. And instinctively, I knew that this was not because nothing interesting was going on. And the more research I did, the more of a really fascinating portrait emerged of people working together to organize in their communities and raise funds to provide for the soldiers, and how it was these volunteer organizations were, especially for women, very empowering. So I think that if you're interested in this era, Lost Quilter and the Union Quilters would be good ones to start with.
Absolutely. And, you know, you shouldn't give short shrift to your discussions on the battlefield. You have a different perspective. Now, I've read, 150 books about the Civil War, maybe. And I've never really, I was really taken by your discussion of the Battle of Gettysburg from the point of view of a physician and the working behind the scenes and taking care of the wounded.
Yes, that's right. I do show, while most of the story does focus on the women, you do see things from the other Elm Creek Quilts characters who have gone off to war. Abel Wright is an African-American who's finally allowed to enlist, and we see him at the Battle of Petersburg. Mm-hmm. And then we also see Dorothea Nelson's husband, Thomas, who's really very scholarly and perhaps not someone you would expect to go to war. And we see him from the perspective of a soldier fighting at the Battle of Gettysburg, and also the long overnight march that mm-hmm. his regiment made to get there in time. And the point that the aspect of the story you brought up was Jonathan. He is the town physician in the Elm Creek Valley, and he enlists as a regimental surgeon. And we see his perspective as he served in a field hospital that was created at a seminary mm-hmm. college in Gettysburg. And this was a real location, and the very riveting, I think, things that happened to him were based upon accounts of real doctors who served in this hospital, this field hospital. Mm-hmm. They just transformed this building into a hospital. And how that hospital, first it was in Union territory, but then as the tide turned, it fell into Confederate hands. And what happened to the doctors and nurses and civilians who were trying to take care of the great many wounded on both sides. Mm-hmm. who were brought there.
So those are a couple of really good suggestions, I think, Julie.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call today.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And you could get a copy of the Union Quilters with a contribution today here at the Ideas Network. We'll talk about that a little later on. But appreciate your call very much. Let's turn to Will in Decorah, Iowa. Will, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
I had a couple of questions. Most of the stereotypical things of quilting is women. But I actually have a little bit of difficulty getting into the groups because I'm a guy that likes to sew, and everybody looks at me like I'm weird. Is there any historical stuff in the books, anything, knowledge of men involved in the quilting?
Not so much in my historical books, but one of my characters, his name is Russell McIntyre, and he is well known as an art quilter. And it's funny, but in his story, he has run into some of the same things that you're describing with your experience as a man in a art form that is traditionally dominated by women. And he appears in Circle of Quilters. That came out a few years ago. But I think you'll probably find his story quite sympathetic. But I do address male quilters. And he ends up appearing in some of my later books, too, because he turned out to be a very popular character with my readers. So I have brought him back from time to time.
There you go. Circle of Quilters.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Will. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sue in Winneconnie emailed in, hi, Jennifer. I was wondering the title of the first book you wrote in this series. How does it differ from the Union Quilters in writing style or other ways?
Well, my first book was The Quilter's Apprentice, and I wrote that when I was 26. And now I'm not so much. So I like to think that with any luck, I hope, wisdom that I've gained through the years, as well as just the continuing to work on my craft, I hope that my books have grown in maturity and in skillful writing and all of those things. You certainly want to hope that you are improving at something you're working so very hard at. But in that story, it's not strictly contemporary. It's not strictly historical either. But it's really the story of two women who are becoming friends. We have a senior citizen and a younger woman who wants to learn how to quilt. And as the older woman teaches the younger how to quilt, they share stories of their lives. And we see flashbacks into the older woman, Sylvia, into her history. So we see her life as a young child, and then we see her as a bride on the World War II home front. So even then, in my first book, I was bringing in some of that American history that I love so much. But it's very dear to my heart because it was my first book, and it started so many wonderful things for me.
Thanks very much for that email, Sue. Appreciate it. Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm Larry Mueller. John Munson joins us. As a regular listener to this program, you know you always are going to hear something worthwhile. Today we're asking you to put a value on this program. Your gift is vital to WPR. It's a big part of what keeps us going. So I hope you'll support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift in any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And John, we're making a little progress here.
Well, we certainly are. We have 12 pledges in the bank, and we have 48 to go to meet our goal of 60 pledges. And pledges like yours keep us on track and support the programs you count on, like the Larry Mueller Program. Thank you so much to those people who have already given. If you are not one of them, well, why not give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and we can say thank you to you, too.
You know, listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's like a tuition-free lifelong education. I can't tell you how much I've learned and how much I've enjoyed doing
this.
But
no exams.
And no exams. Oh, I have to give exams when I'm out there teaching here at the UW. But you don't have to have an exam. All you need is a radio or a computer to listen to. But what we need something, though. We do need something, and that's support to make it all happen. So I hope you'll contribute now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you can receive a copy of the historical novel, The Union Quilters, by Jennifer Cheverini, as a thank you gift for your pledge of $150 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you'll enjoy the book. Again, that's a copy of The Union Quilters for your pledge of $150 or more. Of course, your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you felt that something was missing when you haven't been able to listen to WPR for a while because you're on vacation or you're camping, out of range, whatever. then you know that great feeling when you can tune in again.
Well, you know, you hear familiar voices and you know you're home.
Absolutely.
That's when you know you've just got to have WPR in your life. And the way to keep it there is to support it with your dollars. Please make your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you can choose one of several ways to make your pledge. One of them is the ongoing monthly installments directly from your bank account. Once that's set up, your membership automatically renews. You don't have to think about it again. That's a great way to do it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a great way to be a sustaining member of WPR. And it saves paper. It's easy. It's the most cost-effective choice, meaning your pledge goes that much further. Being a sustainer is such a great way to give that we want to thank you by planting a tree. Just select the tree thank you gift when you make your pledge as a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Start your sustaining membership right now when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Have 47 more contributors to reach here. I hope you will give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose food for 40 as your thank you gift. And this thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Well, whatever you do, pledge now any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Therese from Lafarge says, this program, she says, Larry. Larry's always full of great information. I'm full of something, but...
I've often thought that.
But she says, full of great information, given with a great attitude about life. Many thanks to all of you who make it happen. And really, it's not me who's so full of great information. It's guests like Jennifer Cheverini. And I hope you'll support guests like Jennifer and support this program by donating right now at WPR.org or... call us, 888-202-2552.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. John will come back. We'll talk again. But I'm really pleased to have Jennifer Cheverini with us today to talk about her book today, all of her books, really. But The Union Quilters is the latest. It's a fascinating read. And, you know, Chris, stay right there. I'll be with you in just a second. Chris from Eau Claire's got a question for you. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. And you know what? Let's go to Chris. Chris, you've been waiting a while. I want to get to you. Thank you for waiting.
You bet. Thank you, Jennifer. I realize that writing is probably a difficult job. I've been researching genealogy as a passion of mine, and I really get into the research part of it, and I'm kind of an anal retentive, you know, I keep newspaper clippings, and I rescue photos from antique shops. I don't study just my own family, I study everybody's.
Yeah.
And so I have this wonderful bunch of information, and my goal is to write historical fiction, but how in the world do you get started? Do you have any recommendations?
Well, if you've never tried writing fiction before, I would suggest that you get in touch with a writer's group, maybe at your local independent bookstore or through your library, or perhaps consider taking a class through your community college just to get the basics and also to be able to interact with other writers. Because part of writing is staying motivated to keep writing and having other people, having kind of a team of other people with the same goal can help keep you motivated. If you've already been starting to write and you're more interested in polishing your work and starting to consider publication, then one resource that I recommend often is the Internet Writing Workshop. It's a free resource. The server is based at Penn State, but it's not affiliated with Penn State, except that they're generous enough to give the server space. And there you interact with writers from all around the world, and you submit your poems or chapters of your book in progress, and you get critiques from other people in exchange for critiquing their work. And I found when I was just getting started and I participated in the Internet Writing Workshop that I learned as much from other people, from critiquing other people's works, as I did from hearing what they said about mine.
Sure.
Because then I really had to focus on why isn't this story working for me and what could I do if it were mine to make it work better. And those kind of critique skills really helped me to become a better self-editor. So that's some general things to get you started. But I think you're doing this a great thing already by collecting all of this great resource. Now the point is, now you need to figure out what story do you want to tell, and how can you draw all of that resource, all of that research information, and put it into a compelling narrative. That's the trick. Easier said than done.
There you go, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for calling. Ann in Green Bay, let's go to you next. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just wondering, I've got some old quilting frames. Do people still use the real old ones?
Yes, some people still do. In fact, sometimes the old ones are the most treasured because they really knew how to make them back then. But yes, there are plenty of people who enjoy hand quilting out there. And some people prefer to use a smaller lap hoop so that you can just hold it on your lap and just work on a small section at a time. But other people like having the entire quilt stretched out before them so that they can see more of it, and they won't have to change the rotation too much. You can keep it open more often. And mm-hmm. of course, if you're working on a group project and you want to have lots of friends join in, those large quilt frames are the way to go, because lots of people can sit around it at once and everybody can join in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because my brother was going to cut them up and throw them out, and I said, no, I'll keep them. So I was just wondering if there are people still use them.
You know? Yes, people do, and don't let your brother do that.
No.
He can find something else to cut up.
And I really love your program, Larry.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. And, you know, if she checked with a local quilters group.
Oh, sure. There might be somebody who wants to take those off her hands if she doesn't want to use them anymore.
Absolutely. Ann, thanks again. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Had a couple of good emails so far. We're looking for another one here. Let's turn to Charles in Palmyra. Charles, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I was just listening to the program, and you were talking quite a bit there about the Civil War period and, like, the Underground Railroad. And I just wanted to offer that in Rock Island, Illinois, is the home of the Rock Island Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And at one time, that was a Civil War prison.
Hmm.
And that whole area down there, the Quad Cities and that, is very rich in the Civil War history.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Have you visited that area?
I have not, but now I want to. That sounds like a great place to go. And as a writer, visiting those kind of places, it's the source of so much inspiration. Because reading it and studying it, you get a very different feel from when you're actually in the place itself. And you can get a very good sense of scope. And it certainly gives you a new appreciation for preserving these kind of historical sites. But as a writer of historical fiction, visiting places like that has proved absolutely crucial to writing my books.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Charles. Appreciate the call. Yeah, as I was reading this particular book, having visited Gettysburg, and it was fun for me to be able to picture. And I wondered if you had made the trip to Gettysburg, or if you were able to just garner that from research.
Well, I didn't make a specific research trip during the writing of this book, mm-hmm. because I did used to live. I did used to live in Pennsylvania, so.
Oh, of course.
Yes, so that came in handy. That, but other times I do make very specific research trips. For The Lost Quilter, mm-hmm. I made a lengthy trip to the Charleston area, mm-hmm. and also some of the outlying preserved and restored plantations, so that I can get a sense for what Joanna's life really would have been like. And just to speak with experts, it's a great way to put myself in touch with people who really know that area or really know that aspect of history. And I've been very fortunate that these kind of experts, whether they're professors at universities that I contact through email or docents at museums that I speak with in person, people are very generous about sharing their knowledge, and that's something I certainly have appreciated along the way.
Tell us, you know, and we really haven't set the stage. We've talked around and through about bits and parts of the book, but maybe let's go back to the beginning and set the stage. You have so many different things going on and so many different aspects of the war represented in your books. Talk about, in this book, talk about that.
Well, this book really is the story of how the Civil War affected this community of the Elm Creek Valley. And at the beginning of the book, all of the men, or most of the men, some of them are notable exceptions, are deciding not to enlist, but they've all decided to answer President Lincoln's call to arms. At this point, it's very clear that the war is not going to be over in a few months, as was originally believed. And so the women of the community have decided to give them this rousing send-off, a rally at the courthouse, on the courthouse steps, with patriotic speeches and music. And then all the men are going to march off to Harrisburg, to Camp Curtin, and they're going to going to enlist, or in some cases try to enlist. And then what happens to all the people left back at home? Well, it's a very brief matter of time before the letters from the men start to come home, and they're full of stories of shortages of just about everything: bedding, food, medicine, bandages, clothing. Anything you can imagine that soldiers would need. Because at this point, I'm sure most people are aware, the United States, both North and South, they were completely unprepared to fight a war of this scope on both sides. So in the North as well as in the South, providing so many of these essentials to the soldiers really fell to civilian volunteers. And in the North, there was an organization called the United States Sanitary Commission, and they were kind of the overseeing group, but it was really comprised of these smaller chapters of soldiers' relief organizations or sanitary commission chapters in small towns and communities all across the North. And these groups were almost always primarily comprised of women, because they were the people at home. And when they started hearing that their sons didn't have enough to eat or their husbands were cold at night, well, they rallied to the cause. And as one of the characters in my book says, they wielded their needles for the Union. And they began to not only sew and cook and preserve the different things that their loved ones at the front needed, but they also engaged in many different fundraisers in order to raise the money to purchase different things that they needed. There were gunboat fairs to raise money for this, or a community would have a cannon fair. They would try to raise enough money to buy a cannon to defend their community. And these women, the real life women, did so much of this on their own. And something that I found especially fascinating in my research was how empowering this volunteer work
comes through in your book.
Was for the women, because it was not always considered proper for a woman to go out into the community and to be outspoken or to try to sell something or to try to raise money. It was not always considered ladylike, and a woman had to tread very carefully lest she damage her reputation. But these women were so passionate about advocating for their loved ones, and by extension, all the soldiers that were to them, you know, someone else's son or someone else's sweetheart, that they really developed so many of the tools and skills necessary for living a public life. They had to learn how to address an audience, how to write some kind of a proposal, how to advocate. And by learning how to advocate and by practicing, you know, enacting the advocating for their loved ones, they learned how to become very strong advocates for themselves. So the suffrage movement, the women's suffrage movement, had been going along all this while. But after the war, so many women across the North were very well positioned and very well trained to advocate for themselves in securing the right to vote. So this was, even as it was very important for them to provide for their loved ones and also to to try to maintain the Union, at the same time, while they were pursuing those noble goals, they were also in sort of a dress rehearsal for promoting their own civil rights cause in the years after the war. And that just absolutely fascinated me.
It is fascinating. And that whole thing comes out in your book as well, very well. You can feel people, the women in your book, gaining power.
Mm-hmm.
And better feelings about themselves.
That's true. They, even the most independent among them, gained new independence, yeah, as they had to. They had to take over the farms. They had to manage the households. Yeah. They had to sometimes manage businesses with the men away, and it was a breath of fresh air for so many of them. Of course, they would rather have their loved ones safe at home, but at the same time, it was really an awakening for them.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, author of The Union Quilters. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today. We'll turn back to the phones and take a call from Maxine in Fox Lake, Illinois next. Maxine, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, certainly. Thank you very much. And bravo. Public radio means a lot to me. I'm a senior citizen. And Ms. Cheverino, thank you very much. I'm a quilter for many years, and I enjoy, I believe you wrote a book about the Underground Railroad using quilts and the symbolic rocks, follow the river, follow the fence, etc. I hope you will write a book on what's currently happening in our world. And bravo also to you for including women and women's issues in all of your books, and in a very good way. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for that call. I've always been fascinated by, well, civil rights issues and women's rights issues, and fascinated by women's roles in American history. And I've found that writing about quilters and how they gather together has been a very great way for me to get into understanding what their communities were like. And I do try to bring that out in my story. So thank you very much for your comments.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Maxine. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 and even email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. We would love to hear from you as we visit with Jennifer Cheverini, and John Munson joins us for a few minutes as well as we work through our Wisconsin Public Radio winter membership drive. You count on WPR's Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you, and we count on you to help keep these discussions on the air. So I hope you'll make a gift, any amount, right now. Help us pay for the program you depend on. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Yes, that's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs like this one that you rely on. You want them to be there when you turn the radio on. Well, Larry, we're looking for 42 pledges in the next 40 minutes or so.
Okay.
In order,
one
to,
a minute
make,
or
order
so.
To make our goal. I think we'll find them. We're looking. I think we'll find them, and you could be the next one, the next discovery here at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network connects you with experts. How many times can you just pick up the phone and talk to the editor of a magazine or an author like Jennifer Cheverini, a politician? The Ideas Network gives these experts right to you. To help make it possible, give now at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552. And any amount, isn't it, John?
You bet. Any amount is welcome. You decide. You're in charge. You're in control of the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated. Every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for a copy of the historical novel The Union Quilters as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is one of the most lasting embodiments of the Wisconsin idea. 100 years ago, the people who led this state really had the vision to say, we're all in this together, and the resources of the state are the resources for the people. It's still like that in Wisconsin, and I think Wisconsin Public Radio is a really good manifestation of that. I'm Ann Katz. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for news, connections, and community.
Thank you, Ann. And we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is such a big part of why this program is available to you right now. Make your donation in support of the program you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, now, we don't expect any one or any 100 listeners to carry the costs of this or any other program. In fact, we're glad that the bulk of our budget comes from thousands of listeners just like you.
It makes for a more stable organization. I was just thinking about that. It does make for a more stable organization. It lets us know that thousands of people appreciate the programs they get from Wisconsin Public Radio. So why not join them? Become a member. You decide the amount, then pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty big investment we've got going here, Larry, with all these radio stations and all the equipment and everything else, NPR News, the Associated Press. All that stuff costs a lot of money.
And your financial support helps pay the bills, pay for those things that come with quality public radio. So I hope you'll help meet these costs. Make your donation now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Where are we at with pledges?
Well, hey, we're moving along. We've got 20 in. We need 40 more by 12:30. So I think we're in pretty good shape. But we need you to be the next person to make that pledge. Make that contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I just as soon get the 40 done with here in the next 5 minutes
What would be the fun of that?
it'd be a lot of fun for me. Oh, boy. I tell you what. Sometimes you want to listen to WPR. Maybe you're not near a radio. That's okay because we can listen online from anywhere in the world. Just go to WPR.org and click on Our Live Streams.
And while you're at WPR.org, check out information about your favorite shows or guests you've heard and our audio archives of past programs. Maybe you missed an episode of Larry's program last week. Well, you can go in there and listen to that. And your pledge helps support all of these services.
And, John, you know, there's another thing you can do at WPR.org to make your donation.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Do it now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, you've been talking about this book, and we have the author of the book with us here. You've been hearing all about it, and the historical novel, The Union Quilters, is the latest installment in the Elm Creek Quilt series. And you can have it when you make a contribution of $150 or more to help support the programs you love, just like this one. And you can also get this nice thank you gift with your pledge of $150 or more. Please pledge now any amount at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a great source of information about the nation, the world, about Wisconsin. You value WPR for the lifelong learning it brings to your life. You learn something new here every day, year after year. I certainly do.
Well, you know, it's one of the great things about listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. This continuing education is possible only because of support from listeners like you. Like any education, you get out of it what you put into it. Invest in your education at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're wondering how much should I give, well, that's really up to you. Your contribution of any amount will turn into great programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long. Make your pledge any amount right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And when you do, you will play an essential part in funding the programs you count on every day. Make that pledge right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And we need 38 more contributions to reach our goal for this 90-minute program. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hey, when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. You can do two good deeds at once when you pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Do it right now. Michael from Muskego says, I appreciate all the wonderful programming WPR offers, the variety of opinions and guests available really enable listeners to hear a wide spectrum of ideas about what's going on globally and locally. So that's pretty nice. And Daniel from Fitchburg says, I like listening to the guests. The interviewers are fantastic. Joy Cardine, Kathleen Dunn, myself, Ben Marins, come immediately to mind. That's pretty cool, too.
That's a hardcore listener.
that's a hardcore listener, because that's pretty much... That's taking up the whole day.
That's great. That's fantastic. Well, you know, the main thing right now, Larry, is that people go and make those pledges of support to help us get to that number that we're looking for of 60 pledges this hour. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
37 more to go to reach our goal. If you haven't contributed yet, this would be what a wonderful time to do it. And any amount certainly would be great. $150 will send you a copy of the Elm Creek, the Union Quilters, I'm sorry, Jennifer Cheverini's book. And you don't have to stop there. We've had $1,000 pledges on the program in the past. Someone even gave $10,000 one time. That's
pretty exciting.
That's pretty exciting. And obviously not everybody can do that. But whatever you can afford, I hope you'll think about it now, then make your donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We'll be taking a break for a look at the news. Then we'll be back. Jennifer Cheverini will be answering more of your questions. So stay with us and donate now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest author, Jennifer Cheverini. Her latest book in the Elm Creek Quilt series is titled The Union Quilters. So great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Call with your questions at 800-642-1234. You know, Jennifer, over the noon break, you showed me some pins. That's a beautiful pin.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I started out by, first I wrote the books, and then I enjoyed making the quilts that my characters make in the story, mm-hmm. and I take them around to show on my book tour events when I don't have to fly, when I can drive there. And then around my fourth book, we started creating beautiful illustrated end papers so that mm-hmm. people could see some of the quilt blocks that are mentioned in the story. And that led into, you can see how I got my series mm-hmm. going. One thing kind of led to another. Mm-hmm. And then I just, a few books ago, I think it was with the Quilters Holiday, quilters love collectible pins. Mm. They get them from quilt shows, they get them from quilt shops, and from special occasions at their quilt guild meetings or quilt shows. And so I thought it would be fun to start creating them for the different books that I write as a thank you gift for people coming to my book signings and getting a copy of the book. Then they get to take a little something with them. Quilters love this kind of thing. So, I should have talked to you about this beforehand, but I do have 10 of them here with me. I know you're in the middle of your pledge drive. I'm seeing the numbers on the board right here from where I'm sitting. Maybe we could fit this into some of your pledge drives somehow.
Wow, a drawing. Let's do a drawing of everyone who pledges during the show. Let's do it that way. Everyone who pledges today and... how many do you have?
I have 10 of them.
And you're willing to part with 10?
You know what? I love giving these away because I know how much quilters love them. So if you can't come to see me on my book tour, but you like one of these pins, and they feature two of the quilt blocks that are important in a sampler quilt that the characters make in the story, that the Union Quilters make. One is called Union Hall, which is a very important building in the story, and then Charlie Stokey's star, and Charlie Stokey is a character in the story as well, and they're just really pretty. They're in patriotic colors, and it says the Union Quilters on them, so it'll be the envy of your quilting friends if you wear it to your quilt guild meeting, because these are limited edition. But I have 10 of them here, and you know,
I'm the pants here. We'll do a drawing of
fantastic.
Everyone who pledges during the show today. And 10 people will receive one of the limited edition Elm Creek quilt pens. No matter how much you contribute, whatever it is, your name will go into a hat. We'll draw 10 names out. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
Appreciate that very much. And you mentioned readings and so forth, and I did want to mention that you've got some things coming up really quickly here for readings.
Yes, that's right. Tonight at 7, I will be at one of my very favorite bookshops, Books and Company in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then next Monday, I'll be at another one of my very favorite bookshops, Next Chapter Books in Mequon. It's one of the former Harry Schwartz bookshops. Mm-hmm. And just two wonderful independent bookstores that have always been very supportive of my work. And every time I go to these stores, I get to meet lots of wonderful readers who are interested in history and quilts and just good character-driven stories. And I hope to see a lot of people out there.
So tonight at what time?
At 7 o'clock at Books and Company in Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc, okay.
And then next Monday, this coming Monday, I will be at Next Chapter Books in Mequon at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
And all of my book tour, for people who are listening online through your wonderful website, a list of all of my upcoming book tour events is available on my website.
And your website is?
ElmCreek.net.
ElmCreek.net.
Yes, or JenniferCheverini.com, but I thought ElmCreek.net's a lot easier to spell.
All right.
But both of those addresses will take you to the same place. So if you're listening online, I might be coming somewhere near you pretty soon.
Perfect. Valerie in Manitowoc, we go to you. Hi, Valerie. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for this very nice show. And thank you, Jennifer, for all your nice books.
Oh, thank you.
I'm looking at three of them that have come back to me after being passed around the family. And they're looking well-read.
Oh, good.
And I would just briefly like to tell you a little bit about how genealogy and quilts came together for me.
All right.
I had a grandmother who started a family tree, they called it then. And she made quilts. Her mother, I have the quilt her mother, who is my great-grandmother, made one of these crazy quilts,
mm-hmm,
using pieces of material that her mother, my great-great-grandmother, who was married to a Civil War veteran, saved because she was a seamstress for a living. He died early from war injuries.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a Civil War letter from that same great-great-grandfather telling her if she needed money, which cow to buy.
Which cow? To sell?
Yes, she was living outside of Oconto, mm-hmm, in Wisconsin at the time, and not to be afraid,
mm-hmm,
and to be brave, whatever, and all that sort of thing. And there's even a funny tale in the family that he came home early. I mean, there was no communication, no phone.
Right, right, right.
And the telegram hadn't reached, mm-hmm, her, and she had a gun. Pointing when he knocked on the
door. Oh, my goodness.
You know, thank you so much for calling, Val. And the whole business about letters,
mm-hmm,
and you talked about the letters earlier in your book and how they were shared.
Yes.
Is that something that actually happened? Did people share their letters like
absolutely.
That?
Oh, absolutely. Especially in small communities, letters were almost considered community property because so many of the people in the community, when they went off to enlist, they remained together in a group from their hometown or in their county.
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone wrote home to talk about his experiences in a particular regiment or in a particular camp, the letter almost always included news of the neighbors or cousins or brothers. And so when a neighbor got a letter, there might be something about your family member in it. And these letters home were really a lifeline for the people back at home awaiting word. So unfortunately, the newspaper accounts were not always accurate. And
mm-hmm,
although, of course, the content of the letters varied based upon the writing skill of the individual and how much they were willing to disclose, some of the writers of these letters were very forthcoming with the brutality of what it was really like. Others wanted to protect the people at home. So it really depended on the picture that you got. But you did usually hear what your neighbor was up to or what this neighbor was up to. And so whenever anybody heard that somebody got a letter, people would come by. And not only did they want to hear about how their loved ones were doing, but they also wanted reassurances that they were still alive. And yeah. sometimes you didn't know. And sometimes the mention in a letter, oh, I saw Charlie, and he was complaining about his boots being too small. Well, you said, oh, I'm sorry about the boots, but oh, thank God he's still alive. I knew he was alive at the time of the writing of this letter. And so it was really this, they hungered for any word that they could get. They read the newspaper accounts too, but it was the letters home that they found the most valuable for providing information about those that they loved. So people shared their letters. Sometimes they screened them and didn't always read aloud the more personal yeah. nature. But it was an important means for hearing about other people in your community and people in your own family.
And Val, thank you so much. I want to give Marge a chance to join in as well. Again, thank you, Val. Marge in Monroe, we turn to you next. Hi, Marge.
Hello. Thank you for the program. I'm enjoying it immensely.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you just about patterns that were used during that era. I've recently become very interested in Civil War novels. I've attended Civil War band concerts and reenactments. And now I would like to do something in quilting.
Sure.
Yes. I can recommend some wonderful books by a quilter and historian, Barbara Brackman. She has some wonderful books out. One that comes to mind is called Civil War Women. And then I think her earlier book is titled Quilts in the Civil War, although it might be Quilts mm-hmm. of the Civil War. Brackman is B-R-A-C-K-M-A-N, and she's from Lawrence, Kansas. And some of her books even include project ideas for Civil War reenactors. So I think if you look at those two books of hers in particular, mm-hmm. you'll find lots of great information about quilt patterns that would have been used both North and South or regionally during the Civil War era and the antebellum period as well. And I think that would be a great mm-hmm. starting point for you to begin. And I think it can really enhance your Civil War reenactor experience to know that the quilts that you're using would have been used by people of that time.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Marge. Appreciate it. And Christine in Beaver Dam, your turn. Hi, Christine.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to ask the guest about crazy quilting. That happens to be my particular interest. Just if she knew more about the history of it. It seems to be like I see a lot of old quilts, but I've never really read anything about it. Also wondered if perhaps one of her books included crazy quilting.
Mm-hmm. I do have crazy quilting in one of my books called The Quilter's Legacy. This is a character named Eleanor, and she actually learns to quilt from her nanny by making a crazy quilt. This particular style of quilting came after the Civil War. It was more of a Victorian era, post-Civil War kind of turn of the century. And these quilts were often very elaborate with lots of very fancy fabrics, velvets and sateens and all different kinds of luxurious fabrics. And they were usually embroidered with exquisite embroidery, whether it's just stitches or embroidered motifs or initials. These quilts often didn't have the inner lining, the inner layer of batting for warmth, because for the most part, crazy quilts were more considered for show and for decoration rather than for warmth. And there was a crazy quilt craze for a long time. And then, like so many other styles, they fell out of fashion for a while. But contemporary quilt makers have brought it back and are doing all kinds of really fun things with it. So that would have been a style very, very popular after the Civil War. And if you find any antique quilts, they will typically date from the 1890s or so.
Mm. Thanks for calling, Christine. Shelley in Michigan, who loves your books and really, I'm sure going to be purchasing this book, has a question for you. There ever been a time when writing one book that another one idea pops up and you stop mid-story and switch to another one?
That actually has happened. And sometimes it's just a sense of really what book should I be writing at the time. I started writing The Lost Quilter, and I was working on it, and I was a chapter into it. And then I realized that the book really deserved and needed a more thorough historical research period than I would be able to give it if I continued on at that time. And at the same time, I also like to have a balance between my historical fiction and my contemporary fiction, because I know some people are always eager to see what's going on with Sylvia and Sarah and the gang, and I don't want them to keep them waiting too long. So in that case, I did set aside The Lost Quilter, and I began writing The Winding Ways Quilt. And that's a contemporary story dealing with a lot of lifetime changes that were happening with my contemporary characters. And then when that book was done, then I felt like I had given The Lost Quilter the time it needed for me to conduct the amount of research I realized would be necessary for a book of that scope. And so I was able to return to it. And I think both books are much stronger and much more enjoyable because
you
did it that way.
Jennifer, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, and John Munson joining us. And Jennifer has been brought along some pins, and we just on the spot here decided that we're going to give a pin. We've got 10 pins that she brought today that are part of this particular book, and we're going to have a drawing that anyone who pledges during the show today, 10 people are going to receive one of the limited edition Elm Creek quilt pins. So that's pretty nice, John.
Cool.
It is cool. You know, here we are in the middle of the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Drive. Here today to raise the money we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertain. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help pay for it. I hope you'll go now to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552 right now to ensure the program, the future of the programs you count on.
Well, absolutely, Larry, and we're still looking for 27 pledges between now and 12:30. That means we got about 8 minutes to get them. And we can do this. Thank you so much if you have already given. And if not, please help us stay on track for this pledge drive by making your contribution right now. You can be next at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I really enjoyed the conversation that we have had with Jennifer Cheverini. I hope you enjoy it as well. I know you're going to enjoy her new book, The Union Quilters. It's the latest installment in the Elm Creek Quilt series of historical novels. Take a few minutes now and help us ensure the many hours to come. Make them possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day. Make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, you've been talking with Jennifer Cheverini about her new book, The Union Quilters, and listeners can receive a copy of this book as a thank you gift for your pledge of $150 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you'll enjoy the book. Again, you can get a copy of the novel, The Union Quilters, by Jennifer Cheverini, for your pledge of $150. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is Michael Feldman of What Do You Know, and you're listening to this public radio station during a membership drive. First off, that identifies you as someone who really is a public radio junkie. You just can't get enough, can you? News, music, information, humor, especially if you tune into What Do You Know each week. Do we have to tell you that this station is supported by people who make membership contributions? You probably knew that already. And you probably know deep down inside that you need public radio. Now you know that public radio needs you. So make a call, make a pledge, make a difference. And besides, where else can a liberal arts graduate with a teaching degree find meaningful work as a comedy show host?
Oh, man, Michael Feldman. He's a good guy. Yeah, he's a great one. And so's John Munson. And he and I are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Maybe your gift is $50 or $100 or $500. Whatever the amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Here's a thought. If it fits your budget, consider a gift of $1,000. Your generous contribution of $83 a month, $1,000 over a year's time, will help make WPR programs available to those who can't afford to give. Make your contribution in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, you might have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but that discussion is really interesting. You appreciate the guest's knowledge and also the caller's questions and views. Because that's happened to you, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, we're looking for 26 more pledges.
All right,
in the next 5 minutes or so. And pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs you count on, like the one you've been listening to this morning. Thanks if you've already given. If not, please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of pledge. Every pledge is appreciated. Every pledge helps pay for the programs you love here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Consider asking for a copy of the historical novel, The Union Quilters, as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.